This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm with Lauren Denyer. How are you, Lauren?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good indeed. You work for WST School
That's
in London.
Right.
You're a D4, you're a level 4 tutor, and we've been talking to you a lot about tasting in
That's
the last
right.
few weeks. But what I want to talk about today is any particular idiosyncrasies you get with the fortified D5 tasting exam, because that is a bit of a fortified. I mean, I'll be straight up and down. I'm not a fortified person.
Yeah.
I know some people love it, but I'm not.
I was going to ask you, Chris, when was the last time you had a fortified wine that you chose to have rather than when you were teaching it at level 3, for example?
I hoover up the leftovers. I don't mind Fino Sherry.
Okay.
I'm more than happy to drink Fino or an Amontillado, but port isn't really my thing.
Yeah, so this is it. You know, there's so few people that actually actively go out and buy and drink fortified wines, particularly students. I have to say, I say so few people. I mean, of course, there's a lot of fortified wine consumers out there, but it's not usually the go-to wine, is it? It's not really wines that you tend to have with your dinner. So,
unless you're in the army. I mean, I've done a few tastings with those guys and they love it.
Okay, good. Or in Jerez. But yeah, so it's this is it with the tasting exam. Whereas students generally do pretty well across tasting, fortified does seem to be the weakest area in tasting. And I just think it's due to lack of experience and sort of lack of desiring to taste these wines. We know they're great, but you know, how often are you going to go and get a Madeira? I love Madeira. I think it's one of the best wines. I love sherry. I think they're amazing. But do I open sherry? Do I buy it and open it very often? Not really. Less often than I'd like, but it's not really conducive to, you know, the context that I live in. I don't live in Jerez. I'd drink it a lot more if I lived out in there. And it's not really something that, you know,
it's hard to share sherry with people because they go,
they don't
oh,
want,
no,
yeah.
thanks.
It's not an easy wine to bring out at a dinner party. You're right. And it is also high alcohol. So, you know, if I'm teaching the next day, probably don't want to be drinking too many glasses of it. But no, I mean, it's a great wine. But yeah, so just went off topic there a little bit. But yeah, it is a less familiar category for a lot of students. And so even though they touch on it at level 2 and at level 3, we have a whole unit on it at diploma. So yeah, it's one where I think the theory behind it is really straightforward, you know. Making these wines, there's set rules, there's set ways of doing it, and there's, you know, set categories, styles within categories, I think, and there's only a finite amount of them. I think that's a good thing. You can count on a number of fingers how many of the categories that there are. But when it comes to tastings, there are some issues. I think those issues, they've spread across the SAT. You know, people struggle all over it. One of them is actually in appearance, because we always assume that appearance is quite a simple thing when we're tasting wine. You know, lots of pale lemon wines on the courses. But because we have what I call brown wines, you know, what we might put into amber, brown and tawny. And sometimes when we get to that level of appearance, it's difficult to tell whether you've got a red or a white wine in front of you.
Oh, you can't. I mean, I get a 10-year-old Tawny and a Oloroso, and I get them to guess which one's white and red. And,
yeah.
And sometimes you just can't tell.
It's really difficult. The older they get, and if they've been aged oxidatively, then yeah, it's really tricky. And then, of course, we assess our wines in intensity, so, you know, pale, medium and deep. And when you're not really sure what the colour of the wine is, you're not sure what grapes, is it white grapes or black grapes, and then you have this brown wine in front of you, you know, you're kind of hardwired to just maybe call it pale when in fact it's deep because it's a white wine, or you call it deep but actually it's a red wine.
That is a good point, isn't
it?
Yeah, so you need to make a call about the colour.
Yeah.
Because it's either pale or deep depending if it's a white or a red.
Exactly. Even though they look the same, you've got to describe them differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that really does mess with people's minds. But
how would someone be sure to make sure they know it's a red wine or a white wine?
There are clues, aren't there? So, for example, if it's 100% dry, it's a sherry and therefore it's a white wine. You know, there's little things. So you maybe, you know, appearance, you're not sure if it's red or white. Let's taste it. let's see, if you get little hints of red fruit, you know, much more likely to be a tawny port than it is to be a sherry or a Madeira. But bear in mind, Madeira is there to trick the hell out of us because we've got the Tinta Negra, which is which is a red grape variety. It's a black grape variety pretending to be a white grape variety.
So
there's little things you can do, and I think often people, when they tilt the wine, they look, and if it's got a greenish hue, it's a white wine. If it's got a slightly more sort of orangey, ready hue.
I've never seen a greenish hue on a Michelada.
Madeira tends to see it more than sherry. But yeah, again, it's little things. But, you know, smell, taste, if it's dry, it's sherry, you know. Does it look more browny? I mean, in an attempt, like more browny, blacky. So has PX been added to it? In which case, it's going to be a white wine as well. So, you know, there are little things you can do for appearance. But then it's only two marks, so don't overthink it.
Yeah. But it is tricky, isn't it?
More tricky, definitely.
I was thinking alcohol would be the tricky one because you're in that higher range of alcohols, 16, half, 17, 18, 20.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty good on a white wine. I'm normally within about half a degree of alcohol, typically. I tell my students that, and then they hammer me every time because I'm out by a degree, you know.
I think at high alcohol, it's a bit of a nightmare, personally. Yeah. And you just can't tell, because also how well integrated is the alcohol. You know, you can have a 20% Oloroso, 30 years old. You're not thinking about the alcohol when you taste it. But then you've got a 20% young ruby port, which screaming alcohol at you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really difficult. I think the best thing to do with alcohol is to think about what the wine could potentially be.
Oh, you've said you're not supposed to do that.
No, but I think you can make an exception with fortified wines, because I think there are some fortified wines that are so obvious what they are.
Yeah.
So like a Manzanilla sherry. Or, you know, Fino Manzanilla, it can't be anything else. It's dry, it's got all those biological aging characteristics.
Yeah.
It's pale or medium lemon in appearance. It can't really be anything else. So therefore, it's 15% alcohol, so it's low. If you suspect what you've got in front of you is a port, it's high. You know, so I think use the tools rather than, you know, if you can assess. I mean, my goodness, if you are one of the lucky ones who can taste a wine and be like, oh, that's 16.5%, you know, then great. Because that can then help you identify the wine. But I think more often than not, it's probably easier to identify the alcohol once you have a clear idea of what the category or the style of the wine might be. But then again, it's only a mark, so it doesn't really matter.
As I say, I'm pretty accurate up to about 15.5%. Yeah. And then it just starts to go. But
I don't really try when I get to above about 15%.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get an impression. Like with something like a port, you know, it's a different alcohol that's added. So you do get slightly different characteristics. And that would lead me to port and then to high alcohol. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I'd be going, oh, this is 19% alcohol, 20% alcohol. So therefore, I'll be considering port.
So the tricky one I would have thought would be something like an aged Oloroso versus a tawny port or something like that.
Yes.
Because they look similar. They've probably got oxidative, rancio, I think is the word.
Rancio, yes. bit of volatile acidity. All the others. Well, the thing is, I suppose, with an Oloroso, unless it's sweetened, it should be clear it's not tawny port.
But it could be sweetened. That's
but if it's
thing.
Sweetened,
it
yeah, I think you can get a little bit, it get a bit tricky then. I think, hopefully the appearance, you know, would be helpful. Because I think until unless you get to about 30 years old with tawny ports, they do tend to show a little bit of redness.
Yeah.
In there. Well, yeah.
Sometimes. What about legs? Can you use legs at all?
No, I think the problem with legs,
oh, it's the sugar,
or tears,
it?
is viscosity, yeah. Isn't it? So it could be sugar, it could be alcohol, it could be so many different things. So yeah, I would avoid that because I don't think it's helpful. Because, like, you know, PX, some PX is like 15%, but you're going to have legs that go on forever, aren't you?
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, so alcohol can be a bit of a problem.
It can be, but I think use it, you know, wisely. Because like you say with alcohol, I think, I don't know if it was specified, the fact that it is a different
scale,
yeah, from 15 to 16.4 being low, 16.5 to 18.4 being medium, and then 18.5 and above being high. I think also another thing, actually, just coming back to that point, if it's a wine like an Oloroso or Madeira that's aged for a very long time, it will be high alcohol because of the evaporation. And then it will be high quality as well. So if you've got an Oloroso and you've put it is outstanding, if you haven't put high alcohol, go back and put high alcohol.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. Because I always think of Olorosos, but it's you're right, 17.5%. That's what they're fortified to, but yes. That's not what they are when they've spent 10 years in a Solera.
Yeah, and equally for Madeira. Yeah, you know, these 10-year-olds, 20-year-olds, or 15 in the case of Madeira, will be 20% alcohol. Amontillado, a little bit more tricky, but still, if it's been aged for a significant period of time, will likely be reaching around 19 plus.
So if it's a young Oloroso or a young Amontillado, then you're probably looking at medium. But if it's older, then you're definitely getting into that higher.
I would be definitely considering high, yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point to be aware of as well. So really what you want to do is almost create a grid of alcohol and age and then fill in the different wines.
Yeah,
you can do that. And then that will give you a feeling for, because you say you've got to almost know what the wine is. So once you know what the wine is, that and you know the maturity, because you have a reasonably good chance of getting maturity, then you can then go, okay, this style of wine is a low alcohol, this is a medium, and this is going to be a high.
Yeah, I think you can do that. You can definitely, there are certain styles that will be certain alcohol levels. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's talk about assessment of quality. Is there anything different that you need to think about?
Absolutely.
There?
Integration of alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you can get, I think mentioned before, you know, a very old Oloroso, which you barely will, there's 20% alcohol, but how much of you are you really thinking about that when you're tasting the wine? Because it's so well integrated. Whereas if you've got your very young Ruby Port, you will probably one of the first things you notice when you smell and taste it will be the alcohol. So you need to comment on that integration, and that will be related to the balance of the wine. So that's an important point, and I think I would encourage that for everyone. I think when people first start tasting a lot of fortified wines, because they're doing this unit, they need to understand that they are tasting a wine that's been fortified. So of course there is going to be an element of that character of the wine that is alcohol. So you do need to recognise that there is integration and different levels of integration, but there's always that slightly warming character. So a bit like, you know, when you appreciate a lovely glass of Armagnac, you don't, oh my God, the 40% alcohol in this is crazy. It's like, no, that's part of the package, isn't it? So the same, similarly with fortified. Understand it's a different type of wine, but alcohol clearly is an important part of that. So you need to recognise that and talk about it in the quality assessment. Balance as well. We have a lot of sweet wines for fortified wine. So you do need to talk about the balance of sweetness and potentially with acidity there as well. So with D4, we talk about the needing a little bit of sweetness to balance acidity. In this case, it's more that you need acidity to balance sometimes quite a lot of sweetness.
What about tannins? Because tannins can balance sweetness as well. Do you mention that as a balancing factor?
You can talk about, yes, tannins can come through as something to balance as well, definitely. I think it's easier to write about balance between sugar, sweetness and acidity, but you definitely, tannins are quite important when it comes to, I think in particular, those bottle aging red wines. And again, that can be a signifier that it's a wine that is destined for aging. So if you've got in the glass a young Ruby Port or an LBV that isn't destined for aging versus a vintage port that is, you know, how do you know the quality of both of them? If one is very high quality, high tannins, but those kind of well-structured tannins and it's got, you know, a lot of concentration, that's more likely to be your vintage. And you're going to probably find that it's higher quality as well when you do your quality assessment.
But it does get tricky because a Ruby Port will have high alcohol, and alcohol does tend to sharpen, harden up the tannins in a wine. That burning effect of alcohol does, I find anyway, it hardens the tannins.
Okay. I mean, I hadn't really picked up on that, but I will next time. I'll think about it next time when I taste.
Alcohol mucks around with tannins, or tannins mucks around with alcohol as well, the burning effect of alcohol. Okay. All right.
But yeah, so there's integration of alcohol, looking again at other elements, structural elements that need to be in balance. We need to look at maturation. So, you know, how is the wine complex and where is it getting that complexity from if it is a complex style of wine? And is that related to aging? And is that aging related to maturation that's oxidative or biological? Or is it bottle aging? and then yeah, talking about, you know, anything else relevant to justify the quality of that wine, and the finish and the nature of the finish. And I think with fortified wines, you can get really interesting finishes because you've got sugar and you've got alcohol. So are those things harmonious? Is everything in harmony on the finish, or is something sticking out, or you're getting a lot of sweetness but not a lot of fruit, or, you know, so there's other things to consider.
Sugar tends to be a carrier, I find, on the finish, yeah. So you get longer length with sweetness.
Yeah, it's just, is that length, like, authentic, or yeah. Is it just, you know, that residual sweetness? Yeah.
It's like when you might feel tannins or acidity on the finish, and yet you don't count that as part of the finish. Mm. But sweetness does, I always find wines with residual sugar, the flavour tends to last longer.
It can be picked up a little bit more, can't it? Yeah, yeah. I always think sugar can be a very useful element to a wine.
You see it in a lot of cheap Aussie reds as well, you know, where they use a little bit of residual sugar, and it just helps not only give body to the wine and richness, but it helps with the flavour a little bit as well. Bottle ageing is a really interesting one, because at level 3, you get the wines too young, drink now, not suitable for ageing.
Mm.
Drink now, suitable for further aging, and too old. Mm. And with fortified, you know, you look at things like the definition of too old is all tertiary, no primary, and you look at some of these fortifieds, and they are all tertiary.
Yeah,
so you'd be hard pressed to find a primary fruit.
Yeah,
there.
So we won't call them too old anymore. We'll call them fully developed.
Fully developed. Yeah. So I used to call them just knackered.
Well, I suppose this is the interesting thing about suitability for bottle aging, actually, for fortified wines, is you do have to think about them slightly differently.
Mm.
They've done their aging, a lot of them. So apart from wines that age in bottle, they've done their aging in the warehouses, the bodegas, you know, the lodges, wherever it is they've aged, and they've been purposefully bottled to be drunk. Done, you know, as soon as that process is over, you know, when you get fortified wines, these styles tend to come with the stopper rather than
That's silly little stopper. That's what I tell people. If you ever get a bottle with a stopper on it, you know, the bit of plastic and a tiny stub of cork in it. That's to be drunk ASAP, you know, get it from the shop, glug it on the way. No, not on the way home, but,
basically, as soon as you can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? So these wines are not designed to be kept in bottle. That's not to say that some of them won't hold. Think about the amount of sugar in some of them and the fact they've got high alcohol. But they're not going to improve. So the definition, really, of not suitable for aging here for some of these styles is that it's fully developed and over time it's not going to improve. Now, of course, there's going to be the odd producer, I say odd, there's quite a few, who do believe in, you know, evolution. But, you know, for the most of these wines, that's not really the case. We take a general approach. If it's been aged oxidatively in any way, you know, it's been chosen to be bottled by the producer. So therefore, it's fully developed and it's not going to improve over time. So that's an argument that you don't really use for the other units, but you do use here.
And in particular, you can use the colour of the wine for that as well, can't you? Because oxidative will normally land up with some sort of garnet colour or brown colour.
Yes, unless it's trying to trick you, which sometimes, I think, well, if it's trying to trick you that it's oxidative, it probably has aged a little bit oxidatively anyway, so can use the same argument. I don't think it really matters about quality. The argument is the argument. Just drink it now because it's not going to improve.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with these very entry-level wines, maybe...
You mean like the cheap tawnies?
Yeah.
But they aren't brown, they're red.
Yeah.
They just look pale.
Or, you know, something like a Madeira, you know, that those styles of wines, yeah, definitely you should drink them in their youth. They probably won't hold quite as well as others. For better quality Madeiras, you might argue that they will hold. They do say that in the tasting guidance. So you could add to Madeira, it will hold, because they're just known for it, partly because to do with their high acidity as well. So,
I've had 100-year-old Madeira and it's tasted fine.
Yeah, really.
And it probably tasted very similar at 50 years.
Well, exactly. You know, you can keep them open in the fridge for 20 years, can't you? So, so you can make that argument. With biologically aged wines, when they've only been biologically aged, say Fino Manzanilla, do bear in mind that they've been kept in a protective environment and they're kind of fresher styles. So as soon as they're bottled, they are exposed to a little bit of oxidation. So they are best to be drunk in their youth. And actually, over time, they will change, but they will generally change for the worse.
Yeah. So they're not going to improve. They're actually going to degrade.
Yeah.
Okay then, Lauren, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Cheers very much.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.